Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guests today are Rachel Davis and Amber Ludman, who are the founders of Matchstick Social. They wanted to bring the creativity, data science, and optimization processes usually reserved for global brands to businesses of all sizes. And today they are here to share their experience about starting Matchstick Social and what they've learned along the way. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So, you know, to get started, what motivated you guys to, you know, go into business together?
I think, well, Rachel and I were hired at the same company, and as luck would have it, she sat directly in front of me. And we ended up becoming fast friends and spending more time together. And as we spent more time together, we would just kind of fantasize about, like, if we opened our own shop, what would we do differently than the company we were at? What would we do the same? What have we kind of taken with us? Yep. And so I think we just had a natural sync, and not to mention, you know, we both have a really good symbiotic relationship in terms of Rachel's super strong at things that I'm not super strong in. I'm super strong at things that Rachel's not super strong in. And we just kind of became like a good yin and yang and good sounding board at our former job. So when the time came to open up, I think it was just a natural partnership.
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds like it. It's definitely nice to have those complementary qualities. I think that's what makes an ideal partnership at the end of the day.
Definitely. And from that, we've really been able to make each other stronger and improve. Like, I learn from Amber every single day just by watching her do what she does naturally. And I would say, like,
yeah, I can definitely say I learn from my business partner as well all the time. And yeah, it's so great when you're both able to, you know, really push each other out of your comfort zone and just grow as professionals. So I would love to learn about, you know, your story about, you know, actually starting Matchstick Social and, you know, what it was like in those early days. You know, what are some of those challenges that you had to overcome in those early days?
The early days.
Where did we begin? Yeah.
It was pretty serendipitous, actually. We, as I mentioned, we were at a former company, and there were some changes happening organizationally. And my dad actually encouraged me to branch out and look for other employment just because he was worried that I might get laid off, honestly. So he has a friend of a friend, and he had just purchased an internet marketing firm is what he called it, and said, you know, my daughter's a really great writer. Maybe you should interview her. And I went on to be like, I was thinking I was interviewing to be a staff writer. And then we had a conversation and he was like, you should just be CMO. And I thought, you're insane, but maybe. And so I went up to Pittsburgh, which is where it was the hub of the company was. And I kind of interviewed everybody who was working at the company. And he had just really not seen the skill sets that everybody had. They kind of applied for a job fresh out of college. We're going to do whatever. But so many of them had natural talents that weren't being exercised. So I met with him later and said, you know, I've met with so-and-so. You have them in sales. They really need to do this. Or you have them as writers and they really need to be in sales, et cetera. And I was just sort of reorganizing the company. And he looked at me and he was like, why don't you run it? And I thought, you're insane. Again, like, I already thought CMO was the craziest stretch I'd ever imagined. And we're sitting across from each other and this literally flabbergasted me. And I said, well, I would do that if you would also bring on Rachel. And he's like, who's Rachel? And I was like, I'm going to need to make a phone call. And literally before I called my husband, before I called my parents, before I called anybody, I called Rachel from the steakhouse bathroom and said, like, if we had the opportunity to do this, would you want to do it? And she was like, absolutely.
That's interesting.
Kind of how we started. And then a couple of years into Matchstick, we rebranded, we opened the Charleston office, we did a whole host of things. And we also went through a lot of trials and tribulations of like, what is our service and what service level are we providing? Because initially we inherited a lot of like really small clients, and there were a lot of like, not a lot of strategy behind some of the accounts that they already had. And so Rachel like snapped in immediately, was like, we have to get this to a higher level. And after a couple of years of doing that, we were able to buy him out. And so be 50-50 partners, which was really exciting.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was a pretty unique situation.
Yeah, sounds like it. I love hearing about those cool, really unique stories. But it sounds like you guys have really built a really cool agency, and you've grown it from where you initially started, which is so awesome. So, you know, how do you guys set yourselves apart from other agencies?
You want to take this one?
Sure. I think the biggest thing that we kind of hang our hat on is the marriage between creative and data. So we are not better than or worse than at one or the other. We really believe that they work together as a partnership, and everything that we do, we make sure is quantifiable. As creative as we are, we really want to place as much emphasis on knowing what's working, why things are working, why we do what we do, and we have strategy behind everything. So there are times maybe we go off of hunches or we go off intuition, but our team is graphic designers, you know, media analysts, writers, we really have a well-rounded team that allows us to look at every single part of our strategy for each client, rather than, oh, you want a content strategy? Great, let's write some content. Okay, this got this amount of views, wonderful. What we dive more into is, why is content working? Everything from when are we posting? What type of comments are we getting? That we're being mindful with how we're updating and optimizing strategy, even though we're certainly a very creative company.
And to that point, also, we have worked with so many in tandem with so many agencies of various sizes, huge, you know, billion-dollar companies in some cases. And I've realized that so much of it is like a one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And they're not focused on the individual goals of this client or the individual goals of a certain campaign. They're really just trying to put the client into this mold. And we've just never fallen into that.
Interesting. So you guys really come up with a tailored solution for each of your clients.
And it changes because their priorities change over the years. They progress into a different market, a different product line, a different audience. And we're there to make sure that we're pivoting as well so that the goals can be achieved through social, email, content, website, whatever it may be.
So do you guys serve a variety of industries, or have you, you know, narrowed in on serving a specific niche? How does that work?
We pretty consciously chose not to focus on a specific niche we both like the variety. A part of the fun is onboarding a new client in a different industry, and it's our job to become the experts on the topic. We've actually created a rule internally that we only take on two clients within a given industry. So if we have a real estate company, for example, within the Charleston area, we're only going to take on two because it's more fun to manage, to have that variety, manage a bunch of different accounts. And then also, we don't want to get in a position where we're in competition with ourselves, meaning we're competing on bidding and we're competing in the, you know, our advertising strategy.
Of course. Yeah, that makes so much sense. Okay, very good. And then, so, you know, obviously you guys are growing. You know, we were just chatting before we started recording about how you were in the process of moving into a new office. So if you had one growth tip that you could share with any up and coming entrepreneurs, what would that be?
Oh boy.
Actually, I should say.
Do you want my initials out or do you want my?
I should clarify. So I should say, if you could share with any up and coming agency owners, what would that be?
So my initial thought is, and I think we'll circle back to this with our favorite software, but like, we took a very long time to invest in strategic software that make our processes more efficient. We spent way too much time in the dark ages with manually building out our client reports or, you know, I will always believe in paper and pen. Amber has one right in front of her for a to-do list. However, having a task management software, these really
with the team grows.
Yeah. So refining just our internal processes and figuring out how to work smarter, not harder, has been really integral in the last couple of years in the growth of the company.
I think the biggest thing for me is also because we're supposedly at least master communicators. As marketing people, we should be master communicators, and as writers, we should be master communicators. But I think my biggest thing was how to work with people who don't speak my language exactly, and really trying to refine my leadership style so that I can work with all different types of personalities and all different types of skill sets.
So how do you grow to become, you know, a better leader in your day-to-day? What are some, you know, learning lessons that you've encountered along the way?
I think the biggest thing, I mean, I learn from the team constantly, and I learn from Rachel so much because we're so close and it's very comfortable to say, hey, I noticed that you did this and I don't know that it really reflected accurately what you meant or what you were going for, or, you know, and that just helps me understand like, oh, there's some things I still need to improve in this area, especially with leadership. A lot of times, as we all know, so much of it lies in your body language and your tone of voice and all of these things.
Huge,
and you take
that
for granted when you know someone so well. Like Rachel knows exactly what I mean when I say something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But she's a good sounding board for other people. And she can say, oh, well, I can tell that that person didn't know what you meant. So let's go back. And that can be clients too. It doesn't necessarily just have to be with the team.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's so interesting, all the different communication styles. My business partner is my brother, actually, and he's very straightforward to the point. It's like impossible to hurt his feelings. He's just like, he's quite happy if you just spit the facts at him, whereas I'm a little bit more sensitive. It's like, I want the constructive criticism, but say it to me nicely.
That's
so
fair.
It's just like, it's so funny. Like, it's just like completely different communication styles. But going back to just learning from your business partner as well and other people on your team, it definitely opens your eyes to just how others communicate.
And to that point, when we bring on a new teammate, we have them fill out a document that kind of, I mean, we get to know them through working with them, and that's very important to us, of course. But we ask these questions because not everybody, just like you and your brother, not everybody likes to be... have a difficult conversation the same way. So that's a question that we ask right off the bat. How do you like to get feedback? Do you prefer in person? Do you prefer email? Some people don't, you know, so many things can get lost in translation via email. So I prefer in person, but other people are more uncomfortable with that.
And they want it to sit, they want to be able to sit with it for a while and think about, you know, they don't want to be put on the spot, as it were, with a personal, you know, feedback session.
I would say also to this question, making a lot of mistakes along the way.
Yeah,
so we've been in business for 9 years, and there are certain things that will haunt me of like, maybe my one day write a letter of what I've learned from our team and from the mistakes. And with our team, we really our office doors are quite literally opened all the time, unless we need to have a private conversation or we have a client call. But we really think communication, I mean, we say it ad nauseum to the team of internally with clients, communication is everything. So
yes,
we never want a teammate to be unhappy without us knowing, or, you know, every teammate should know if we feel as though they're struggling or if there are things that they need to be working on, it's on us to keep the lines of communication open.
And to that point, I wanted to point something out is that we didn't used to have an onboarding employee form.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept having this conversation for like years of like, well, how do we like really understand what they want? And Rachel's like, why don't we just ask them? And I was like, oh yeah, that's a very simple solution. So creating processes like that, that can actually just help you inform your leadership style a little bit better. It seems like a no-brainer, but it's one of those things that doesn't really occur to you in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes so much sense. So on your onboarding, you'll ask them, you know, if they would prefer, you know, whenever you have those one-on-one meetings, if, you know, they prefer like email or face-to-face meetings, that sort of thing. And then you can get a feel for what they prefer.
Well, we do, how do you prefer to receive feedback or constructive criticism? Okay. How do you prefer to be rewarded is a big one for us, because a lot of times people want you to stand up in a meeting and say, everybody kudos, Haley did an amazing job on blah, blah, blah. Some other people are like, listen, I just want more money. I just want a bonus, you know, like that's fine too. And knowing what they expect in terms of reward and what they expect in terms of feedback. And then additionally, in our 6-month and annual reviews, we do a lot of what can we do to improve our communication with you? How have you felt in terms of, you know, getting this feedback? Is there anything you wish to change, or is there anything we can do to set you up for success? I think we do a really good job of that. And most of the team really appreciates, or all the team really appreciates.
Another question that we ask is how do you define a good boss or a good leader? And that always gives a lot of insight. So one employee might say someone who acknowledges your work a lot and, you know, kind of guides us to, okay, positive affirmation is something that really rewards her. And then another employee might say to give someone who lets me really work autonomously and trust that I can do my job. So asking those questions. I've never worked for a company that the supervisor or boss got reviewed by the teammate. So yeah. We wanted to create our version of that so that, again, Amber and I are always improving and refining our leadership skills and our managerial skills. And a happy team works harder and the office is more fun. And
yeah, totally.
Know, really, that's our company culture and our team dynamic is extremely important to us. So,
and transparency is a huge part of that. If you say, I want to be rewarded with this, it holds us accountable immediately mm-hmm. to know that that's what you want. And if you get into a 6-month review and you say, listen, I feel like this hasn't been fulfilled, then it's very easy for someone to be held accountable and be transparent when it's all up front.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I love that idea. I think that's so smart to really just get such a great feel for the different communication styles for your team members, just to really help build a positive environment at the end of the day.
We also do personality tests, Myers-Briggs personality tests for everybody during the hiring process. It's like one of the last steps. Not at all for like, oh, we would never hire an ISTJ, but just because there are so many types of you know, I'm an introvert, but I'm still very social. But when I'm ready to work, I might need to put in my headphones. I might need to go to the conference room, might need to go to the call room, what have you. It just helps us because, I mean, we have a teammate who's been with us for 5 years and she will get into meetings and she's like, you guys, I can't focus. You were all chatting and it's great, but I need to really, you know, and that's just something I need to know about her.
Yeah. And it's interesting because certain members of your team could be working on things that aren't really to their strength necessarily. So it's interesting by taking those tests that sometimes you can uncover certain things that even maybe that person didn't even necessarily know about themselves. Yeah. So I would love to pivot a little bit now and talk about sales. So what are some ways that you guys actively bring in leads into your agency and then close those prospects?
We've been really lucky to not really have to do too much in terms of bringing in new business. We've never really done cold calling and we've never really had to, although when we first opened up on King Street in downtown Charleston, we did quite literally knock on doors and hand out business cards.
Remember we sent the Valentine's.
Yeah.
We sent Valentine's to all of the businesses we wanted to work with. And we had our business card and we had a bunch of candy and we dropped it at their doors. Mm-hmm.
And it said like, I have a crush on you.
We've got a crush on you. Yeah.
But I love that.
We have seen the most success referrals. I mean, our clients, we have great relationships with, and that's always the best.
And strategic partnerships too, with, you know, there are a couple of companies in town and even outside of town that do web development, or they do Google Ads, or they do SEO, and that's just their bread and butter. And they know that our bread and butter is social. And so even though they might offer a little social and we might offer a little web design, it just still makes sense to escalate it when they say, okay, somebody wants something other than what I'm willing to provide, or beyond our bandwidth, I can always call Matchstick and I know that they're going to be ready to take it on, and vice versa. That's been really helpful as well.
It's so smart building those relationships.
Mm-hmm. I would encourage new agencies to go out and network with the marketers, or not the marketers, the services that are tangential to your marketing, and just say like, hey, I don't do what you do, you don't do what I do, like, let's refer business.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so smart, because, and plus you can learn so much from, you know, working in the same industry as well, you know, running a marketing agency. It's so nice to be able to collaborate with other digital marketers.
Yeah. And I think it's worth noting, of course, we have a solid social media strategy that most clients, if not coming through, they like to see, and that has definitely been impactful for bringing in new business. And we also kind of intermittently throughout the year do Google Ads. But our website has been extremely successful in converting.
It's definitely the first thing people say about us. Like, I loved the website, which is always nice to hear. And then Rachel here is very obsessive about getting client reviews on Google, and very diligent about emailing us like once a quarter and be like, hey, who can we reach out to? And that is always a huge differentiator that people mention. I looked at your reviews. They're all stars, or they're all 5 stars, like no brainer.
Amazing. Yes, of course. So I know you guys mentioned that you have great relationships with all your clients. You're bringing in tons of referrals. So what do you attest that success, you know, to? How do you create really happy, loyal clients who are going to refer you out at the end of the day?
They have to like you, then they have to trust you, and then they have to...
They got to like you, they got to trust you, and then you got to follow through.
Follow through.
So that's... Amber's dad has said that several times, and it's really fantastic advice and something that we kind of keep as our internal mantra. But truth be told, communication is what is most important. So I always say, let the client, to the team, we say, let the client's biggest complaint be that they hear from us too much. Like, put us on snooze if we're communicating too often. We never want a client to not know what we're working on, what's coming up next, what they've delivered on in the past. You know, we're not convinced all of our clients read their report, but they will get it every single month without a question, because we want them to know exactly what their investment is. The relationship with the client is extremely important to us as well. And just putting in that extra time. I think that we chose an industry that has kind of developed a bit of set it and forget it and touch base at the beginning and end of a month, or even at sometimes a quarter. And that's, we have our internal rules of a client should never wait more than 24 hours for a reply, even if it's an acknowledgement of a receipt. Again, a client should never call and ask, why are we doing something, without us having a very strategic answer. And sometimes that answer might be, we're testing out something new and here's why.
Also, I think to your point with client communication, the most important thing is for new agency owners who may not know this, marketing is the first thing to go when times get tough.
Yeah.
Like, always. That will be the first thing that people get rid of. And so there's naturally ebbs and flows in agency life, but the ones that come back are the ones that you have gone over communication with. And you say, they've never wondered what we're doing, they've never wondered what we delivered. It's simply a rough time in their business. And then when things ramp back up and they're ready, they come back and into a wonderful relationship again. And I think most of the time, it's never going to be a 10 out of 10 every single day. But if you can have transparency and say, here's what we're testing, here's what we're doing, here's what you're spending, here's what didn't work, is just as important as what did work. And if you can over communicate, you'll just build that really trustful relationship. And if that ebb does happen and the flow comes back, you're more likely to win that client back.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a great point. Yeah. And I think just, you know, managing those expectations, which falls exactly into, you know, that communication, managing their expectations right from the start so that they know, you know, what you guys are working on and there's no confusion along the way because you've got that communication dialed in is just going to prevent so any like confusion popping up down the road.
And in the onboarding process, it's super important to establish with them, our strategy is only as strong as how much you let us in on your business. Like in the beginning, if someone hasn't had a marketing team before, especially not an agency, they're not total, we're not top of mind to them. So they don't think about adding us to a document for an event that's coming up, or they don't think about telling the team to take pictures when they're out and about at XYZ, you know. And so having the over communication literally just keeps us top of mind. Be like, hey, social feeds on fresh content, and we are going to need you to be our partner here and tell us what you're working on and telling us what is important in your business as well, so yeah, that our strategy can be aligned.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I feel like the team would be disappointed in me if I didn't also say under promise and over deliver.
Yeah. that'll be
Yeah, it's such a good point for sure. Definitely. Awesome. So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've been growing your agency?
The obvious answer for our specific industry, because we do primarily work in digital marketing with an emphasis on social media, is just the constant change in our industry. So
yeah.
I mean, particularly over the last couple of years, but we've kind of gone back and forth over 9 years in business of sometimes we're more of a content company, other times we're more of a media company, and that changes with the industry, that changes with ad updates. The iOS update kind of turned everything upside its head, and also, of course, the pandemic changed things, so we've had to adjust with the industry, with client demands, with budgets. You know, Amber mentioned before, marketing is typically the first thing that goes. So that's been, you know, kind of evolving our identity and reestablishing our role in what, you know, what's working best. So for example, from a media standpoint, once upon a time, for a couple $1,000s in advertising budget a month, we were able to just knock it off the park, and you would see major, major returns. Even for smaller accounts and smaller businesses right now, I can imagine everybody struggling because you really aren't getting results from a couple $100 Facebook campaign. Right. So what used to be a 30-cent website transfer is now close to $85 per transfer, which is pretty significant. So absolutely, as an agency, we've, you know, we're kind of pivoting with the times. It's of course our responsibility to research and be aware of how to pivot and how to kind of beat the system. But that's been just kind of a constant hurdle.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. How do you guys work to kind of stay ahead of the curve and stay current? Both, you know, yourselves and your team as well, because digital marketing is just always evolving and growing so quickly.
Rachel was warning us about iOS for like a year before it happened. I almost didn't think it was going to happen because I was like, I've known about this so long and it still hasn't happened. I think mostly just trying to keep up on trends and research with some of our thought leaders, like John Loomer is a wonderful thought leader in the digital marketing space. And even like silly things like TikTok, there's so many thought leaders on TikTok now that are constantly putting out awesome content about things that are upcoming or trends that are upcoming, and yep, keeping us abreast. And that way, when we are aware of it, we're thinking immediately, like, how does this apply to various clients and how can we keep things creative or safer, or, you know, prepare the client for the change that's coming. A lot of people are raising rates right now. A lot of even the softwares that we have used in the past are raising their rates. Like just being aware of, you know, any trends that are coming, and again, over communicating them. And also a lot of times with our clients, we're telling them like, look, this is happening. We're not going to know how it affects us until it actually happens. And we're going to be there. You know that we're on your side. We're fighting for you. We're fighting the algorithm. We're fighting the platform. Damn the man. And they trust us to be on top of it and have their best interest at heart. And if things are going beyond our control for some reason, then we just say that, like, look, you know, the algorithm has changed and we have to move with it. But right now it's going to be a little iffy of a time while we figure it out.
And that's where the data science and optimization comes into play, because really the, what do we do about it is we test. Mm-hmm. And it's, and what works for one client isn't going to be the same answer for another client.
Right. Yeah. I love that. Just having the honesty and transparency and, just being just very open with your clients. So where do you guys see Matchstick Social in 5 years' time?
Well, we'll be moved into our new office, which we are happy to say has a couple extra desks. So
very exciting. We have
the intention of expanding the team a bit. And, you know, it's a difficult question to answer because the industry is ever changing. But in terms of...
We'll be video producers.
Yeah, right?
We'll just be a video production company at that point. It, like Rachel said, it really depends. I'm joking about video just because it's everywhere. And it's the only thing that matters right now. But it really will depend. If you had asked me 5 years ago if I would be like a super nerd about ads, I would have laughed in your face and said, like, absolutely not. Rachel handles the ads. to the question earlier of the earlier days, like, we siloed everything, every service that we provided, we siloed. So like, I wrote all the content, Rachel managed all the ads, and it's such a joke because
it was mayhem.
Yeah, and like now we look back and think, how silly was that? Because you really have to be so comfortable with both sides of the business. And I'm sure we'll grow the team and we'll all have to just sort of be the jack of all trades.
In terms of 5 years from now, on a personal note, I have a goal of never working on Fridays. So I would love
to. Oh, I love that.
That's a year goal. 5 years, 5 years time. Hopefully we're at a 3-day work week.
At a minimum, a 4-day work week for sure.
Yeah, I actually had a woman on the podcast a few months ago, but yeah, her goal was to just take off one Friday a month. So yeah, that could definitely be, you know, one where to start, and then, you know, just work to taking every Friday off.
The good thing about the pandemic is I think a lot of people have just drawn a line in the sand about things like that. Mm-hmm. And everyone's just sort of accepting it. Like, you know, like, okay, that person doesn't work. Remember when
we had one client, I was like, no, we don't work on Fridays.
And we also had a client that said, I will never have a meeting before 11 o'clock. And I was like, wow, that's kind of amazing. I don't know him, but good for him.
Well, I will say I've shifted towards trying as much as possible not to have client meetings on Fridays with the intention of eventually shifting to not working on Fridays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's so nice when you can actually have one day a week where you don't do meetings and you can just get caught up on like your inbox and like those other little tedious tasks where you need to be so present, and they can always just get pushed. So I that's definitely my goal, is to have one day where I don't have meetings just so I can get caught up. All right. Well, yeah, we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but do you guys have any, you know, final thoughts or words of wisdom that you would like to share with our listeners?
I would say the number one thing that I've learned in business is it's all who you work with. And that's your team, that's your business partner, that's your board, if you have one, if you have advisors, if you have mentors, all of that completely shapes and molds who you are as a person, both professionally and personally. Like, there was never a time that I considered in my young professional life before we owned the company of, well, what can I say no to? Or how am I ever going to have a baby and have a company? Or how am I, and all the people that I've surrounded myself with have just given me such solid advice. And you need a lot of them, because some of them are great for certain things and some of them are great for others. But choosing the business partner is the most important thing. I always joke that Rachel and I are wives to our husbands, because we are. They know.
Yeah.
Well, to piggyback off of the importance of who you work with, it's also the clients you choose. So believing in the clients that you're working on for hours and hours and hours at a time, it feels a lot less like work when you believe in them and you believe in the strategy and you're enjoying the work. And yes.
Especially because it requires a lot of learning. Right. And if you're not interested in what they're doing and not interested in how they make money, it's going to be like pulling teeth.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's a really good point. So we're going to move on to the fast five now. So I've got five rapid fire questions for you. So first question, what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Mine is How to Win Friends and Influence People.
That's a good one. All right. Classic. And then next question, what does your morning routine look like?
I will say I hate this question because I know that the cool girl answer is drink my lemon water and meditate and journal for 10 minutes and then forget all that. If you needed any of that to be successful, none of us would be successful. My morning routine is like wiping the sleep out of my eyes, feeding my kids breakfast, and like drinking coffee like it's my will to live.
I love it. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
Brené Brown, for sure.
Awesome. What is your favorite online tool?
I would say it's a tie between Basecamp and Sprout just because they make us so much more efficient at things we used to do incredibly manually.
Yeah, both great programs. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Amber kind of touched on this already, but just the fact that you can say no. If something makes you feel uncomfortable or you don't believe in,
uninspired.
Yeah, if you're uninspired, if you're being tasked with something that you don't stand for or you don't believe in, you have the right to say no.
Great advice. I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Rachel and Amber. I've really enjoyed learning about your story and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was fun.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast and we'll see you next time.